As the Occupy Wall Street protest encampment entered its third week in Lower Manhattan, activists there launched a march over the Brooklyn Bridge on October 1st that resulted in the arrest of 700 people. Although the New York City police say they warned protesters over bullhorns that marching onto the iconic bridge's roadway was illegal, eyewitnesses accused police of leading hundreds into the car lanes before moving in to make mass arrests. Whatever the original intent, the police crackdown on the Occupy Wall Street activists, including the documented earlier unprovoked pepper spraying of protesters, has given the action widespread and mostly positive publicity across the nation and the world. By skillfully employing social media and circulating viral video of police abuse, the Occupy Wall Street model of protest encampments has spread to more than a dozen cities across the U.S. Occupations of public spaces have been organized in Los Angeles, Chicago, Boston, and other cities large and small, with the number growing every day. Although activists gathered in New York and other cities don't as yet have a comprehensive list of demands, those involved clearly have a common set of beliefs focused on resistance to unbridled corporate greed, facilitated by a corrupt political system linked to a call for accountability. Your reporter visited the protest site at Zuccotti Park in Lower Manhattan's financial district on October 1st and interviewed one of the Occupy Wall Street organizers, who goes by the name of Joe Hill, just before he and hundreds of others were arrested on the Brooklyn Bridge. Here he talks about the origins and future direction of what appears to many observers to be the foundation of a new national economic and social justice movement.
About a month ago, some of us got together and formed the New York City General Assembly and began to make groundwork and planning for the hopes that we would be able to claim a space in the financial district to raise a critique about what's happened in the economic system and to build a movement to fight back against the consolidation of wealth.
What did you envision back before September 17th and the beginning of the occupation, and compare that maybe to what actually has happened in the couple of weeks since?
Well, I've been hoping for 20 years now, but most recently with the last crash, that people would begin to fight back. But frankly, I thought that we wouldn't last more than a couple days and that we would be cleared out by Monday and that there wouldn't be enough people to maintain the strength of this space. And so I didn't expect that we would last more than a couple days, but hope that we would.
So what's been your impression of how this has taken off, not just here in New York City, but there are other groups forming around the country with similar occupations happening or being planned?
My impression is that this is the most exciting moment in my adult life. I've been working for social justice in various capacities for 20 years and have never seen the excitement and enthusiasm that's taking place right here and across the country. And I think a lot of that is due to the method of organizing that's being employed here, which is, you know, not having slogans and cookie-cutter approaches that can be quickly co-opted by anybody, be it the Democratic Party or a trade union, but rather it's individuals and people who may or may not be part of groups coming together to find common solutions and common ground, which has really struck a nerve with people who, you know, don't have other avenues of protest. And that the process itself is exciting. Of course, it's based on things that have happened in other countries, including Spain, Greece, and North Africa. You know, and people are really serious about this. This is not a ragtag group of people who don't know what they're doing. Most people have read quite a bit about the other movements and are actually employing those tactics and strategies so that we can grow and build the kind of movement it's going to take the country back.
As you were planning this before September 17th and the occupation began, were you consciously trying to formulate something here that would go beyond a simple protest and actually be the seeds for the start of a movement?
Absolutely. Some of the feedback I got from people that I invited to this is, why are you doing it on a Saturday? And I would explain that this isn't a demonstration, this is an occupation, and most people move into new houses on a Saturday, and so that it's a day that we could begin the movement, but wasn't going to be a one-day protest. The days of being able to effectively have a one-day symbolic protest and affect policy are in our past. What we need to do is actually have a sustained resistance.
Where do you see this thing heading in the next few weeks to long-range future? You know, people talk about camping out here in the middle of January when it's, you know, below zero or 20 degrees and a lot of wind and snow. What do you see happening?
I think the commitment and the conditions that most of these people are facing by being unemployed, by coming out with massive student debt, will keep this thing going for the long haul. I'm not sure exactly what sort of shape it will take, but I certainly think that what started here is not going to stop anytime soon. I hope that the encampment can stay throughout the winter, but the ultimate goal isn't just to hold and occupy this space. The goal is to create a platform by which we can begin a resistance against the 1%. And that's already happened, and the contacts and connections that people have been making in this square will last beyond this square, and the tactics and things that we're all learning from each other are things that will help us get through winter, and certainly will be around in the spring and summer, and really, frankly, if you talk to people here, they're saying it's as long as it takes, and I believe that. I believe that that's the overwhelming sentiment of people here.
Beyond the occupation and the symbolism it represents and the hope it represents for people who want to take the tact of resistance, what concretely do you want to have come out of this thing in terms of, a change in policy or presenting policy alternatives and then making demands to invoke them?
I mean, I don't think that change in policy is in the cards with the way that our government is structured, be it money in politics or be it the two parties that are acting for the same class of people, that we're not thinking, I'm not, and many people here aren't thinking about it as any sort of short-term policy fix. So we don't want to get behind the health care for all banner that turns into health care for everybody from 19 to 26 years old. We don't want to get behind some, you know, employee free choice act that ends up people don't get collective bargaining, and then hear great speeches for some great candidate. That's not where it's going. In terms of the concrete things that could happen, those are happening. People are learning how to feed each other. People are learning how to take care of each other, and people are learning how to share skills. And frankly, creating a new democracy and a new economy in a small square in the heart of the old economy. And so when we get a new economic system in this country, I don't know, but it seems to be happening faster than I thought it would have happened. If you look at mainstream labor unions endorsing this action and people coming in off the street, this thing is growing quicker than any of us had hoped. And we take a long vision for how the change can happen, and it's happening one person at a time.
That was Joe Hill, an organizer with the Occupy Wall Street protest encampment. Find links to more information on this new economic justice movement by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.